When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you. I had to fail, had to fall.
It is the final word World Cup Daily Men's World Cup 2023. Adam Collins with you, Cam Ponsonby with me. We're here for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. And it's been an extraordinary day for Netherlands cricket. The Dutch have done it over South Africa. Cam, tell us all about it in 30 seconds.
It rains. We're down to a 43-over match. After 34 overs, Netherlands are 141 for 7. The game looks done. It's going to be the most boring, conventional 2-0 defeat, comfortable, that you've ever come across. Then Roelof van der Merwe, Arjen Dutt support Scott Edwards, and they get 104 runs off the final 9 overs. It takes them up to 245, and all of a sudden, South Africa actually have to bat. They actually have to do something to get the runs they need, and they fail dramatically.
Yep.
It's a wonderful victory for the Netherlands. The World Cup continues after one shock 2 days ago. We've got another one. Game on.
Yeah, 2 in 3 days. Nicely summed up. So the Netherlands made it to 245 for 8 in the rain-reduced game in 43 overs. Edwards, you touched on him before, brilliant. The captain, 78 not out from 69 balls. The bulk of that came at the end. So they're 141 for 7 after 34, and they make 103 in their next and final 9 overs to get them up to that very competitive tally. Then they inflict a 3-for-6 collapse in 15 balls. It becomes a 4-for-8 collapse in 19 balls. The wheels were falling off for South Africa. They're all out for 207, which means the margin of victory for the Dutch is 38 runs. It could have been worse. They were actually, would you believe, playing for net run rate, the South Africans, towards the end, but they lost their final wicket from the penultimate delivery. Logan van Beek appropriately picking that up and getting a third, a couple for Van Meekeren, a couple for Roelof van der Merwe. He was brilliant, as was Bas de Leeuw, breaking it open one final time, 2-for-36. Cam, we've seen a lot of Holland in the last few years. They've been in the World Cup Super League. They've earned their spot in this tournament. That was a tough group to get out of in that qualifier in Zimbabwe. We've all been saying to each other occasionally on the podcast, they're going to win a game at some point, we just don't know which one. It felt fitting it was against the side they knocked off at Adelaide Oval in the T20 World Cup last year.
And it proves a lot of people, including myself, wrong in that. In the first half of this match, I've got a friend who has this theory about cricket, that if you play a level above, no matter what standard you are, you'll average 20 and you'll be fine, but you just won't be good enough. And that's exactly the impression I had with this match in the first 34 overs, where I saw two teams competing and one of them was just a bit better than the other one. We were just waiting for the inevitable. And then this kind of miraculous kind of final 9 overs, we touched on Scott Edwards there, sweeping unbelievably well, being really proactive. Roelof van der Merwe just got a chaotic 29 off 19. I've got a colleague who describes him as playing cricket like a teenager trying to impress a girl. Just complete carnage all the time. And then something that's really overlooked, I think, was Arjen Dutt came in at the end and got 23 off 9.
3 sixes in that as well.
Completely changes the game. All of a sudden, it takes it to a school where South Africa have to think. And I always think people go, like, oh, you can never be complacent. But that never counts the times when teams are complacent and they just win because they're better than other teams. All of a sudden, South Africa had to go out and get 240 scoreboard pressure. And the thing that I can't go over, which I thought was a stroke of genius from the Netherlands, was opening up with the off-spinners. Yeah. They had Dutt on for the first over. They followed him in with Ackermann after one over seam at the other end. And people always talk about matchups and talk about off-spin against left-handers and trying to have that attacking play. I thought it was kind of the opposite. It was like the anti-matchup. They were begging this South African top six to take a risk against them. They were saying, these are meant to be your banker overs. These are meant to be overs that you churn away in the middle overs, take us at 7 runs and over, and you're fine. No, these are the people you have to target. So target them right now. And are you willing to take that risk with 240 runs still to get? I thought it was a fantastic piece of kind of strategy from the Netherlands, and it worked handsomely.
Well, they were in a holding pattern for the first 8 overs, weren't they, until Quinton de Kock is out to Ackermann, the off-spin of Ackermann, around his front pad, gloves it up in the air. That can happen. But it's a couple of overs on from that. Temba Bavuma out to the first ball of Roelof van der Merwe. You mentioned it before, the 64-run partnership with Edwards that just changed everything. Like, if you were simulating that game from where it was at that juncture. 50 for four, the Dutch were. 140 for seven. You know, they're all out 162. That would be a central case, yeah, right? They outperformed that by nearly 100 runs in the final analysis. And, you know, I've been thinking about these Dutch players through the course of the day. Scott Edwards doesn't even have a cricket info profile. He was an electrician in Melbourne playing club cricket. He wanted this so badly, he made it happen. Roelof van der Merwe, he's now 38 years of age. He was a discard in South Africa, but he hung in there. He kept improving. He kept putting himself up for selection after getting his Dutch passport. He keeps playing county cricket, and here he is. Paul van Meekeren, he's been playing cricket for the Netherlands for a decade. At one point during the pandemic, just to stay afloat, he was working as a delivery driver for Uber Eats. I mean, Arjen Dutt, 20 years old. He's the story of migration. He's actually an Amsterdam boy. Yeah. His parents are from India. He was inspired by watching the 2011 World Cup where India won that trophy. And then Logan van Beek, 11 years playing for Holland after 3 years waiting, right? He had to wait 3 years to become eligible after playing underage cricket for New Zealand. He played underage basketball for New Zealand as well. His grandfather was a test cricketer for New Zealand and the West Indies. I mean, a fascinating story, but they all play their role today. Vastly different storylines to get them to this place. There's no like production line, if you like, if you're going to be a Dutch cricketer. There are ways of getting there. Most of them are unconventional. And the fact that they were able to bind together the way they did to knock off a side that felt like it was kind of, you know, maybe not one foot in the semi-final, but the way they played against Australia, they looked daunting. To knock them off the way they have today, it says a lot about the way in which these guys have had to want this so badly.
It's been the kind of Dutch production line you touched on there. It's a really interesting case study at the moment. Now, in Holland, the sport has traditionally been like a posh white sport, basically. Yep. Funny that, familiar tale. And the phrase used, I think, by the Dutch journalist Bertus de Jong is that kind of contained or constrained but sustained the sport in the country, and that it kept going but it was never going to go anywhere. But what's happened of late is you've kind of got this, the cities like Amsterdam, Rotterdam are getting a growing, still only slight South Asian population, and as a result you're having where previously people would look at this Dutch team and go, just Saffers, or just lads from New Zealand or whatever. Yep, but you actually have Amsterdam born and bred boys such as Arjen Dutt, such as Vikram Singh, such as Shariz Ahmed, who's on the bench for this competition.
Yep.
And they grew up there. They are out and out Dutch boys. And so you have this change in the demographics of who is playing kind of cricket in Holland. So I remember doing a piece on this last year. And of the 14-man under-19 squad that played in the World Cup for the under-19s, eight were of South Asian descent. So you're having this kind of change in Holland of the way the sports, of the fact they are, rather than being this team who kind of rely on the diaspora of around the world, to actually being kind of a born and bred Dutch side.
And look, they're still going to an extent rely on passport players.
Absolutely.
And that's fine, because I guess the overarching point I'm making is if you choose that lifestyle, it's seldom an easy one. Like, you've got to leave where you live, you've got to change the whole rhythm of your existing life, you have to try and find a way to keep playing domestic cricket, professional cricket somewhere. But, you know, Scott Edwards isn't doing that. Like, I know he's full-time with Holland these days, but he's playing club cricket in Melbourne. A lot of these guys are, you know, journeymen in the domestic English system, which has been to the disadvantage of Dutch cricket in recent times, when they weren't released from their counties to play in the World Cup qualifier, nor were they released by their counties to play against England in a 50-over bilateral series last year. Much of their World Cup Super League fare has been absent players who do well enough to get long-term deals in England. So it's blotchy, it's complicated. I suppose my overarching really is that when they get a little bit of a window and a little bit of a sniff, like it was when they had the chance to haul down that big score against Scotland in Zimbabwe to even make this World Cup, they don't miss out, because they know those chances don't come around too often.
It's remarkable when you talk about, we're talking about Scott Edwards, but we're talking about his sweep shots. I love like this. So he was in this innings today, he was 26 off 9 when playing the sweep or reverse sweep.
And they're all one hand off the bat, right? I mean, he's extending the...
That's textbook, that.
They're all the same. You know, you might see one with a prolific sweeper, one hand off the bat, and you'd make note of it on commentary. He does it every single... I mean, it's not by chance, it's by choice, right?
And we saw this. So the first ball he faced off spin today from Maharaj, he swept straight away, four off one ball. And then he tried to block the next four and kind of missed. That was an LBW appeal. I think it might have been a review. It was one of these things where, like, the convention of cricket dictates he's not allowed to sweep every ball, but maybe he should. And so I pulled up his numbers. And in ODI cricket against spin, he sweeps 29% of the deliveries he's faced. So one in three balls against spin, he will sweep. And that's the second most in the database of everything. That's including Jimmy Anderson at number three, who's obviously just doing it because he literally cannot play another shot.
He does it for the social media, mate.
Exactly. This is literally a guy who relies and banks on this shot and is world class at it, yeah. Despite having this kind of club cricket, grade cricket background.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, again, it's making the best of what you've got at your disposal. And in Edwards' case, it's a mighty sweep shot. So, you know, when he cleans house at the end to finish the innings the way that he did, he brought up his 14th half century for Holland. That's now equal with Ryan Tendiscarta. You know, yes. He is not the greatest necessarily on any metric, but in one day cricket, Tendiscarta had an average with a 6 in front of it. He made 14 half centuries, a range of centuries as well. But, you know, that's the level that Edwards is playing at the moment. He's had a brilliant 2023. And, you know, down the list, you mentioned Arian Dutt's 3 sixes, the scrappy work of Roloff van der Merwe. Van der Merwe, he doesn't always make Somerset's first team. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, he was a sub-fielder against Middlesex in a home game down there at Taunton. And he just had to get himself involved in the game. The visiting captain was Peter Hanscom, played a ball down to mid-on, didn't realise or didn't factor in van der Merwe being a brilliant fielder, like we saw at Adelaide Oval, that catch he took running back with the flight to knock off South Africa last year. In one motion, flicked the stumps down, and that was a turning point in that 4-day game. Like this is a guy like that, and he's a brawler. The way he celebrates, the way he's in despair when we haven't mentioned Baz de Leeders drop catch off David Miller. I thought, man, I mean, you know, in my notes are like, you know, bloody hell, is all my notes say here. I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be the turning point. We're going to be having a conversation about poor old Baz de Leeders, and we discussed him when we covered a Netherlands game the other week with the family history, what his dad was able to achieve in earlier World Cups, but. It was fitting that Baz played a role and the relief on his face when Miller was finally bowled with that agricultural swipe across the line.
And there's two kind of intangibles here, which I don't know how much to kind of state or overstate. One was I was trying to work out in terms of like competitiveness, and you could refer back to the Netherlands beating South Africa in literally the last World Cup match they played against each other last year in the T20 World Cup. You had, I think it was 7 of the Netherlands teams today were involved in that match, and 8 of the Saffers were as well. So actually, you go into this contest where everyone, including myself, goes like, routine South African win.
Yep.
Whereas actually, you've got 15 of the 22 players on that pitch who have experience of being on that side of the result between these two teams. And that's obviously going to play a psychological factor if you're a Dutch player going into that, going like, hang on, we've literally beaten these guys the last time we played against them.
Bit of muscle memory, right? Like, you know, we all know what it's like in club cricket. If you've beaten a team before,
just keep going.
This happens. This happens in domestic cricket. There's no reason why it can't happen in international cricket. I mean, there's this debate. I can see it already playing out on Twitter. Is this a bigger upset than England getting beaten by Afghanistan? I actually don't think it is on the base, and I know that the Dutch are an associate member and Afghanistan are a full member, but the broader complications for Afghanistan in recent years, never having really played a home game, never having the opportunity to really play against England outside of these kinds of tournaments, the Dutch have made that very most of the World Cup Super League. The sad part of this is that the World Cup Super League no longer there. The Dutch may well qualify for the World Cup in 4 years' time in the expanded tournament, but they also might not, because suddenly they're playing 24 bilateral matches against against 12 full member nations will be taken away from them, and their fixture list will diminish accordingly.
And I think something where I'd go in terms of the Afghanistan game, and I know you can look at the rankings or whatever, fine, okay, but I think something that's potentially might be missed or might be understated in this win is the fact that 14 overs were lost in the game.
Yeah.
And so if you look at that card, when Holland are 140 for 7 after 34, their hand is forced. They have to turn, they have to attack then. If that's still a 50-over game, van der Merwe protects his wicket for a little bit longer, bats for Scotty Edwards, and instead they had this moment, they had this little period which turned the game on its head. Say they do attack in the same way, and so they do get to 240 for 8 that they finished on. They probably get bowled out in 46, 47 overs, and that run rate pressure isn't the same on South Africa.
Right, yeah.
I really genuinely think that though those 14 overs lost really changed the complexion of the match. And it always plays into the favour of the weaker side. The fewer overs you play, the more volatile the match is, the more that helped the Netherlands in this instance.
Because, and it worked the other way too, right? Because the scoreboard pressure they were able to apply when van der Merwe takes those 2 wickets in quick succession. I think
the touch
was 4 for 8. Like, I think Winvis went from like South Africa, even after losing 2 quick ones, they were at 75, 2 more, and they were down at 40. I mean, it turns quicker because there are fewer overs to make up.
No, absolutely. If you have, after 3 overs, obviously there were only 40 overs to go, and so you literally, it's the same as if you go down to a T20. Say you have two maidens in the T20, all of a sudden you've lost kind of 10% of your overs.
Yeah.
Like the rate's going to fly through the roof. And as soon as you saw that, and as soon as you see, I'm a big believer in that, as soon as the run rate goes above six, I don't care who it is, I don't care the standard of the cricket is, it's difficult. You've got to score a run every ball.
Richie Beno over here, that was his old thing.
Was it?
When the run rate gets to six, it was always his thing in one day, as in the 80s and 90s.
Very, very similar broadcasters, very similar spinners, very similar standings in the world of cricket, actually, me and Richie.
Just on South Africa now, they've blown an opportunity here. They've dropped a game they should be winning, yeah, having already accounted for Australia and Sri Lanka to start their tournament. I mean, I thought there were moments in the field where they started to lose it. That second leg by, was it the penultimate delivery or the final delivery, where they get through for two when they're too busy appealing for, yeah, the leg before and not worried about where the ball is, they sneak through for a second. And look, they did let it drift at a crucial time there. You know, their batting will have better days than that. It was scoreboard pressure principally. But, I mean, in a way, what a great 3 days for Australia. Australia have had England drop a game they shouldn't have, yep, lost. They've won their own fixture against Sri Lanka. That means Sri Lanka are kind of one foot out of the tournament. No room to work with there. And now South Africa are brought back to the pack as well. Exactly. So it might be one of those World Cups. Or I know last time there was one team with five wins that got through, I'm pretty sure. Maybe it was
No,
New Zealand.
No, England, I think it was six.
England got six. Did New Zealand get five? Anyway, the point is, yep, is that five might be realistic. So therefore, net run rate could be a factor. And it might be quite well, who's to know? The way that Ngidi batted towards the end, trying, yep, to just stay out there till the bitter end. I know we talk about this all the time on The Daily Show and it can be annoying, but it's not irrelevant. If you can eke out an extra, you know, tenth of a point on that, absolutely, run rate in a tournament that could get log jammed towards the end, you've got to think that way.
I was thinking about this earlier today. I was thinking back to when Jeff spoke on the show about World Cups, ODI World Cups. You've got to have patience. You've got to let the ebbs and flows play out. The problem with that is I'm a very impatient man. And I was trying to work out, I was like, what does this mean? And actually, it's kind of, as you said, the pack's kind of being drawn closer together with the way the results have gone the last few days. My great fear is I'm thinking it's kind of going to turn out like the current F1 season, where you're like, oh, so it's an exciting race for second, and you've just got India being Max Verstappen just winning everything at the,
right,
top.
Yeah.
But to talk about South Africa specifically, I think one reason they shouldn't be too disheartened by this is that, like, this is, their team is not set up for close contests. This is a team that will batter you or get battered. They go top six, nothing. Marco Jansen's a good player, cool, whatever. But he's at seven, he's probably a place too high. Their whole kind of mantra relies on the fact that we will belt you or we'll get belted, basically. We've got a top six that will take the game away from you or chase down whatever target you set. We'll get 300, four down in 40 overs, carry on. And as soon as it goes beyond that, they don't have that safety net, basically. And so that is kind of the pressure that will always come onto when they're in the chasing environment, is that actually that added pressure is added onto Kok and Bavuma, is that there's that added responsibility in terms of, rather than being like, oh, we'll just set a score, yeah, and we'll get there. It's actually a case of, well, if we get out, we've only got kind of three more players who can get the runs.
Sure.
And kind of along with that. So I don't think there's no world where this South African side, we're going to go through this group stage unbeaten or anything. It's kind of a method of get to the semi-finals, be on full front attack for a semi-final, final, win the comp, go home.
Yeah, and hope it clicks, right? Like, it's a boom or bust. It's a high ceiling kind of game plan they are playing. So we'll keep an eye on them. So for what it's worth, South Africa, their next game is against England on Saturday at the Wankhede. Helps you work, rest and play in Mumbai. And the Netherlands play Sri Lanka. Not a bad time for the Dutch to get Sri Lanka. I loved the way in which, and this kind of segues into the Hall of Fame actually, but I'll just mention it on the way through, that Van der Merwe at the halfway mark was shitty. They didn't get 250. And Edwards was the same. I enjoy, and they've said on the record from the outset, they want to win the thing. We can make the semis,
yeah,
and if we make the semis, then we're two wins away from being world champions. Like, it's the absolute correct attitude, yeah, to take if you're the Dutch, because they have now been successful in so many different games, in different tournaments, in different setups over 4 or 5 years. Like, yeah, they deserve to be bolshy. And having Sri Lanka next up, who looked like they are shot entirely, yeah, man, that's on Saturday at Lucknow. That's the early game.
I guess the argument is, if you can beat anyone on your day, just make it your day every time, basically. One thing I wanted to pick up on South Africa, I was trying to work this out in terms of, say they hadn't lost, say they'd won again, they're this form team going through the competition. But this is the same side that I was reading the kind of post-mortem after they lost against the Netherlands in the T20 World Cup and how it was a kind of nation in crisis.
Yeah.
They sacked off the ODI series against Australia. They've planned the SA20 during the Australian, the New Zealand Test series. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, what? I was trying to work out what it would mean. And this is more of a hypothetical question than anything, that if a nation in that state, in that kind of administrative state, in that kind of, who's been written off so kind of completely in the last 12 months, actually went and won the ODI World Cup from a place where they'd actually been sacking off ODI series. What does that mean, if anything, for kind of cricket in the wider kind of context of the sport?
It's a very reasonable question, and one we will hopefully get the chance to ponder if they can bounce back. Time for the final word, Hall of Fame. Final word, Hall of Fame, is brought to you by Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. Half term's coming up, Cam.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really know what half term means because I was schooled in Australia.
Yeah.
But as you can hear, you can probably hear through the microphone, Winnie's going nuts upstairs. She goes to school next year. I will learn what half term means. Cool. In summary, is it a week off or 2 weeks off? What's going on there?
It's a week off. Week off. Halfway through the term.
How many terms
name.
Are there, though?
There's kind of, three terms.
Yeah, so in Australia, there are four, and I think that's, you know.
That feels excessive.
Yeah, four shorter terms might be here, three.
So actually, you just go for three main holidays, and we go for a half term on each case.
Yeah.
Because we want to go to Westfield, Stratford, and Westfield, London.
Quite right. Yeah. And if the action on the field has given you a hankering for some international cuisine, why wouldn't it after a day like today? There's no better time to fill your tum. From family-friendly favourites like Bill's, yeah, I cop that. So the reimagined Indian street food of Bindus Eatery, where Jeff and I have been, there's one option for every Steve Smith pre-delivery quirk. Nice, good copy. And with dozens of places for the whole family to skate, bowl, golf, bat, and more, there really is no better place for half term and a day out than Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. Hit some dingers. Fill your boots. More extra. Less ordinary. Cam, you can open the batting. What is done? I see you Googling Dutch food there. Dutch food, you often get lovely Indonesian food in Amsterdam, don't you? I mean, that's a whole colonization thing. I don't want to get into this, but that is a nice part of going to that part of the world.
They've got the little kind of small pancakes, which are called like Prifrid. I can't pronounce it. I really can't. And they've also got that beer snack where it's like deep fried kind of meat, kind of roux thing. And he goes with a beer. Don't know what it's called, but it would be at Westfield. It's fine.
I'm sure it is. We got together last year as part of the Amstelveen One Day Internationals. Invite them back, England. There's no World Cup Super League anymore. Send a England A team and call it a one-day international. It doesn't matter. Status, they send A teams everywhere regardless. Have a European knockout once a year. Rotate it from Dublin to Edinburgh to Amstelveen. And England are the touring team on each occasion. Play it in April or May as a season kickstarter. Make it T20 format, make it one-day format. I don't care. I just want to go back to Amsterdam for a cricket tour because it was so much fun last year. Now to the Hall of Fame. Stadies I'm distracted.
I've got two.
Yep.
One was, and this is a very small one, Arian Dutt was whacking these sixes with this really sexy Reebok bat.
I saw that.
And it was really bringing back memories, and I couldn't work out where they'd come from because at first I thought it was MS Dhoni and or Virender Sehwag.
Yep.
Looked it up and it wasn't the same brand, but it looked fucking wicked. And the second one was just to kind of to reinforce how much of a disastrous defeat this was for South Africa and that they've been beaten by the Tim Port South African B team is when the camera went on the Dutch lads subs at the end in the dugout. They were waving at the camera like they're in the stand. They weren't on TV enough.
The Dutch fans were great today. There were so many. They did have the TV.
There were 12 men apparently. You're on TV. You're literally winning at the World Cup. And they're like, you're right, guys. How you doing?
Oh, I'm on TV. Yeah. Hi, Mum. Max O'Dowd's piece of paper. That's featured a couple of times in the Hall of Fame now. Yeah, be prepared. Be prepared. I like that Max O'Dowd, not captain, remember. He's the one that's got the matchups written down like a penalty shootout goalkeeper at the end. What's going to be the trick there is someone getting that piece of paper and ripping it up on the field.
Yeah.
Who is the prick who will do that? Who's got the personality who will dig into his pocket?
It's like a fake plan. It's like it's like when British Army tucked a note in the body and they showed that was a bit dark, but there we go.
No, I know what you're saying. I like that again. I enjoyed the work of the third umpire, and to my deep chagrin, I didn't write down who it was. You know the good thing about making a podcast like this, we can check who the third umpire is, and I can pad for time, and I can tell you that the third umpire was I can't even find it on the page. Shafadullah, who at one stage, there was a leg side caught behind appeal, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he goes, I already know that's not going to be given out on review for leg before. Yeah. We're skipping that. Normally, the third umpires by default get nervous and do that. So well played to the third umpire.
If you were Crick Info rather than Crick Buzz user, you'd have got that quicker.
I kind of bounce between the two. It's not personal. I've worked for both websites. I'm keen to work for Frickenfeld again in the future, if that's to be. I'm not only one website these days. Dirk Nannis, he's Melbourne forever, isn't he? I mean, some things that he says, you know, that he can be Dutch. He is a former Dutch international. But when he describes net run rate as boosting the percentage, and that'll mean nothing to you, but to our listeners in Melbourne, that's a very, very footy term, boosting the percentage. Nice. So good on you, Dirkie, for that. What else did I have here? Oh, the non-striker killer from Edwards to roll off Van der Merwe.
I enjoyed that.
The style points for Van der Merwe jumping out the way that he did. They're my Hall of Fame options.
He ran the most ridiculous two, Van der Merwe. He sprinted right down the middle of the track. It was at the end of the innings. And everyone knows what you're doing. It's fine.
Yeah.
And then he took this widest berth to get back. And it was kind of, I was just like, I feel like you're putting on like a show of like just extra energy where it's not required. And it actually irritated me quite a lot from the other side of the world. And the other one that got me was, I can't remember who it was on comms, but it was when Max O'Dowd's piece of paper came out. They went, are you telling me they can look at like data online and it can tell them which bowler to bowl at which batter? And I was like, God, I think it was a setup to like start a conversation. But I was like, yeah, I think they might do that. And I think they might also be sat in the back of the box giving you information to talk about on screen as well.
I mean, Bob Woolmer had the earpiece in the Hansi Cronje in the 99 World Cup, and they should have kept that. I quite like the earpiece thing. You should never have had that taken away. Tomorrow, it's New Zealand against Afghanistan. I can't remember where that game is, but I'll be doing it with Jeff. Jeff's, I think, in Chennai, Bangalore, maybe one or the other. He's somewhere. Jeff's in India. Cam, you'll be back with us on the weekend. This has been the Final Word Daily, a famous day for Dutch cricket, victorious over South Africa. Our coverage, as always, is for Westfield, London, Westfield, Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. Talk tomorrow. Bye. That'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, wrote this so you know what I meant. I had to go.